Hey, good morning, and welcome to MidCurrents. If this is your first time here, I want to say a special welcome to you. Even if this is your second time here, I may not have had a chance to meet you yet as I was gone last week. So if this is your first time or your second time here at MidCurrent, my name is Sten, and I'm the pastor here, and we are just thrilled to have you here with us this morning. We always love a chance to be together on a Sunday morning. Looking forward to this upcoming sermon series. Let me begin by just asking you this. How many of you remember, you can just show me your hand. Real quick, how many of you remember the first time you saw your parents cry? Anybody? A couple hands going up. Okay, the truth is that's actually even a little bit of a hard question for me to answer. I don't know if I can do that. So let me try this one. How many of you remember the first time your kids or your nieces or nephews saw you cry as an adult? Anyone remember these moments? Your kids see you crying for the first time. This one's a little easier for me. It's in recent years, in the last couple years, actually. Erica's family, my family, we've had some, harder moments. We had to say goodbye to some grandparents and loved ones. We've had some other difficult moments. And in these moments, there's sadness. In these moments, sometimes there's tears even. And now that our, oldest daughter, Lucy, now that she's getting a little older, you can tell that she's a little bit more in tune with things that are happening around us, right? You can tell that she knows what's going on. In some of these moments when she catches us crying, you can tell her that it catches her off guard a little bit. You can tell that it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. You can almost see the confusion on her face, like, I didn't think grown-ups were supposed to cry. Right? You can kind of like see her trying to process this all. Lucy, in fact, she had one of these moments just about a month ago with some other grown-ups. It was after her preschool graduation, which, if I can just take a second here, these were always one of those deals that I felt like were so silly, like these preschool graduations. I felt like they were so dumb until it's your own daughter, and then you're like filming the whole deal. You're like, this thing is incredible, okay? So it was after her preschool graduation, just being honest here, right? So after her preschool graduation, Lucy went to say goodbye to her teacher, right? This, she had an awesome year. She loved her teacher, and she went to say goodbye to her teacher. And when she did, her teacher, an adult, right, her teacher started to cry. And again, you could tell that Lucy did not know what to do. I mean, she's like, what is happening here, right? Like, she's going, I didn't think adults were supposed to do this. In fact, after the fact, I asked Lucy, right, especially as I started thinking about this, I asked Lucy, I said, hey, what did you think when you saw your teacher cry? And she said, I kid you not, she said, it was weird. I think this was her way of saying, or her little five-year-old self, I think this was her way of saying, like, that was kind of unexpected. Like, I didn't know what to do. I didn't know adults, like, cried like this. And I think our teacher picked up on the fact because she was very quick to jump in and to very graciously assure Lucy in that moment. She said, no, Lucy, these are happy tears. She said, hey, this is such a great year. These are happy tears that I'm crying. And that seemed to help make sense for Lucy. And so it was a great little, it was a great little teaching moment for her about feelings and about expressing emotions and how, adults can do that. And so that despite the fact that she was a little confused, going like, what's happening? This is weird. Despite the fact that this was kind of unexpected for her, it ended with her learning a great lesson that was really important for her to learn. And here's what I think. I think that's generally the case, right? That there's some kind of lesson for us to learn, that there's something important for us to learn. I think that's the case when someone older or someone wiser or someone more experienced than us does something that, or demonstrates something or says something unexpected. I think there's, in those moments when someone older or wiser does something or says something unexpected, I think there's, those are moments where there is something important for us to learn in that moment. I think when moms or dads show vulnerability in front of their kids, or they do things that their kids don't expect, or when bosses do something that their employees didn't really see coming, or when leaders do something that their people don't really understand, I think there's usually something very important to learn in those moments that catch us off guard. I think there's something incredibly important to learn in those moments when someone further down the line than us does something that we didn't see coming. And that's exactly what is at play. That is exactly what's at play when Jesus does something that his followers don't understand, that they didn't see coming. He gets baptized. Jesus gets baptized. And that's the moment that I want to talk about today in the very first week in our series called Dunked. Okay? It's a three-week series all about this thing that we call baptism. And the truth is, baptism changes everything. Jesus's baptism does. It changes everything. And ours, when we take that step, it does as well. It changes everything. It's such a big deal. Baptism is just one of two things that has a really big fancy name in the church. It's what we call a sacrament, right? It has a big fancy name. And all that is, all a sacrament is a visible symbol of God's grace for us, right? A visible symbol of something that otherwise would kind of remain invisible, hard for us to see or touch or feel, right? It's a visible symbol of God's grace for us. Baptism is one of those things that has that big fancy name, and then communion or the Lord's Supper is the other. But for the next 3 weeks, we're going to talk about baptism, and we're going to look at it from a number of different angles. And so we're going to start this morning in the very first week of this series, Dunked. We're going to start, actually, by exploring Jesus' own baptism, because it really does change everything. It signals something so important for every person that comes after him. And the truth is, it caught people off guard. This moment when Jesus went down to get baptized, it caught people off guard. Especially the man who is known as John the Baptist, who baptized him. When Jesus says, "Hey, I'm next," John's like, whoa, no. This doesn't make sense. I can't be doing this. This can't happen. And Jesus says, "Yes, this is happening." Right? John says, I don't know about this. Why? Because when a leader does something that the people don't understand, there's generally something really important to be learned. And there's something really important for us to learn when it comes to Jesus's baptism. And my goal this morning is to help you see it here today. Okay, the first clue, and this is just kind of a little, this is a little bonus material for you here this morning. The first clue that Jesus' baptism is a really big deal, the first clue that this is really something significant that is happening, is that all four of what we call the Gospels, all four of the Gospels mention it. The Gospels are the first four books of the New Testament, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And all four of these dudes, they lived during the time that Jesus lived, and they wrote about what they saw and what they heard and what they experienced. That's what those books are, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. That's what those books are, their accounts, their memory, their recording of those days when Jesus walked on earth. And they didn't coordinate with each other, right? They weren't like, well, hey, what are you going to talk about? Are you going to mention that, or should I mention something about it? Are you going to write about that? They didn't do that. They just wrote and recorded what they saw and what they heard and what they experienced and what they thought was significant. And so all four of these accounts, they're kind of telling the same stories, but they're all very different in terms of what they talk about and the details that they include. It's all very different accounts, and they didn't always write about the same thing, but this time they did. This time they did. All four of these guys mention this moment of Jesus' own baptism. And so you know, wow, this must be something significant. And so we're going to start reading about what Matthew had to say about all this. It's in Matthew chapter 3. We're going to start in verse 11 with just a little lead up to this moment when Jesus gets dunked, okay? This guy, John the Baptist, he's out preparing the way for Jesus. This is kind of what's happening up to verse 11 here. John the Baptist is out preparing the way for Jesus. He's baptizing people. He's telling everyone to get ready, you know, get your hearts ready. He's saying, turn your life in the right direction because this Messiah, the one we've been waiting for, he is on the way. And here's what he has to say. He's preaching to everyone who will listen. He says this, "I baptize," John says, "I baptize with water those who repent of their sins," or turn from their sins and turn to God. "But someone is coming soon who is greater than I am," bigger deal than me. Says someone soon is coming that's greater than I am, so much greater, he says, that I'm not even worthy to even be his slave or to carry his sandals even. "And he will baptize you with the Holy Spirit and with fire." John is saying, hey, folks, you know, I know you know who I am. He's saying, I know I've been pretty vocal here. I've been doing my thing. I've been preaching and I've been teaching and I've been inviting people to get baptized, and people are responding and people are repenting and people are preparing. He says, I know you might think that I'm a pretty big deal, but he's saying, I'm just paving the way for someone even greater. He says, I'm just kind of blazing the trail for someone who is coming, who is even greater than I am. He's the one that we have all been waiting for. So skip down to verse 13. That someone greater shows up, and it's Jesus. Here's what it says. Then Jesus went from Galilee to the Jordan River to be baptized by John. Jesus says, okay, yeah, my turn. Yeah, I'm next, right? I'm standing in line. Verse 14, but John tried to talk him out of it. John says, I'm the one who needs to be baptized by you, he says. So why are you coming to me? John tries to talk him out of this deal, right? John's confused. He's like, this doesn't make sense, right? He's urging people toward baptism as a way to prepare for Jesus, right? To turn from their old life and to turn toward Jesus. And now Jesus is asking to do that very same thing, and John doesn't get it. He's like, this doesn't make any sense, right? This can't be happening. I picture John looking at Jesus the very same way that Lucy looked at me when she first saw me crying, or when she first saw her teacher crying. I picture him looking on going like, this doesn't seem right. This doesn't add up, right? You're not supposed to be doing this. I think this is how John is kind of feeling in the moment. So let me just remind you then, I think it's this moment when a really great lesson is learned. It's these moments when we're going, man, this doesn't make sense, that some of the greatest lessons are learned. In this case, we learn a really, really, really great lesson, a vital lesson about Jesus. In this moment, we learn an incredible lesson about God the Father who sent him. We learn a really important lesson. So let's keep reading. Verse 15. But Jesus said, it should be done, for we must carry out all that God requires. He said, it's got to happen. We got to do this. And so John agreed to baptize him. Jesus gets dunked in the water and back out again. Stay with me here, okay? Despite his confusion, like, is this supposed to be happening? Can we really do this? Despite his uneasiness about the whole thing, John baptizes Jesus. Jesus gets dunked in the Jordan River. If I had to guess in this, you know, moment, people are watching, there are crowds all around. If I had to guess, I'm thinking that John was not the only one who was caught off guard here. In fact, I'm fairly certain that this would have caught the attention of most people that were gathered there that day near the Jordan River. I think most people would have been scratching their heads at this one. Here's why. John's message that I mentioned before, right? He's out preparing everyone for and pointing to this very powerful figure to arrive. He says, hey, you might think I'm pretty great, but someone even greater. Someone even greater than I am is on the way. He's out pointing to this, very powerful figure to arrive. He's saying, hey, get ready, people. He's the real deal. He's so much greater than I am, and he's on the way. And because of that message that John kept preaching, most people were expecting someone very different than Jesus to show up. Most would have expected some kind of powerful king, you know, to come onto the scene and to reclaim the throne of their ancestor David. Others likely would have expected like a dominant military leader, right? When they're hearing, hey, someone he's coming, he's on the way, they're thinking, oh, good, we can't wait. They were expecting a dominant military leader who's going to come and finally rescue them and finally lead them and finally deliver them, you know, from all the oppression that they had constantly faced as a people for one reason or another. Other people would have expected a really distinguished prophet, right? So someone speaking out, right? A really distinguished prophet, similar to, but so much greater than John. These were all of the images that were kind of conjured up in people's minds about who it is that John was pointing to. He's saying, get ready, people. He's the real deal. He's on the way. You're not going to believe it. You got to get ready. That's the kind of image that people had. But that's not who arrived on the scene. It wasn't a decorated king. It wasn't a dominant military commander. It was Jesus. A solitary figure from an insignificant agricultural part of town. Okay, verse 13 says that Jesus arrived from Galilee. That's where he's from. He's from Galilee. Right? Galilee was you know, like most, you know, better recognized. Galilee was better recognized in that day as like Nowheresville, Israel. Right? So insignificant, right? We've got a lot of people who come to Midcurrent from a lot of different areas in town around the area here. So I'm not gonna even attempt to make like a local comparison, right? To Galilee, you know, with any towns around here, but I'm sure you're thinking of one. Okay, that's Galilee. It's Nowheresville, right? In another section of the Bible, when one of the disciples is told that this Jesus was coming from Galilee, he responded, Galilee? Can anything good even come from Galilee? Because that's his reputation, and that's where Jesus is from. And so he's such an unlikely figure. He's such an unexpected figure to step into the place of the one that John has been going on and on and on about. People are going, oof, this is going to be good. And then Jesus steps up. They're going, what? And what's most unlikely about him, what makes him the most unlikely figure is that now he asks himself, okay, here's what we're getting at. What makes him so unlikely is that now he asks for himself to be baptized by John just like any of the rest of the crowd. And all of this points to the very first thing that I want us to see and that I want us to learn about Jesus in this moment, okay? As he finally convinces John, John's going, I'm not doing this. And Jesus says, yeah, we got to do it. He convinces John, and as he goes into the waters of baptism, what's he doing? He's identifying with his people in their need. He places himself right alongside, right in the same boat, right alongside the sinful humanity, that's you and me, right alongside the very people that he came to save. Jesus very could have been up there in the front. Jesus could have been up there in the front, you know, standing with John, right, calling all the sinners to repent. He very well could have, you know, been the one to take the lead, say, hey, John, you step aside now. I'll take it from here. He very well could have been the one to say, hey, you know, sinners, hey, everyone line up, all right, let's do this thing. You got to get ready, line up, let's get baptized, all right, don't you know who I am? Everyone fall in line. But he doesn't do that. Instead, he just gets in line himself. He's right down there with everyone else painting. Here's what he's doing. He's right down there with everyone else painting a very physical picture of his solidarity with them. He's making himself one with them, one with his people, one with the people that he came to save. He fulfills the message that John's been preaching about the one who's on the way, the one who came to save. He fulfills the message, but he does so not perched high up on a cliff on the riverbanks, but he does so right from the shallow end, right from the water, identifying with the very people that he came to save. Some of you need to hear that here this morning. He's identifying with the very people he came to save. Jesus is not some heavy-handed, you know, judge that's, you know, dishing out punishment to everyone who messes up. Okay? He is not some, you know, heavenly police officer sent to earth to round up all the bad guys or all the people that said a bad word or thought a bad thought or did a bad thing. Okay, there in that moment, he was actually a physical picture. He steps into the water. right alongside everyone else. He was a very physical picture of a God who actually put skin on and came to earth to walk with us, to be with us, to stand alongside of us, to identify with us. And it got all of their attention, and it sure gets mine. Right? That's the kind of God that I'm willing to follow. One who's, you know, not just, you know, way up there, but a God who's actually right down here with me, with you, with us. Gives a whole new meaning to the idea of having some skin in the game. Okay? And our God does. He very literally has some skin in the game. It's huge. So big. Such an important thing for us to realize. But here, there's more, okay? There's something else that I want you to see that comes right alongside of this, okay? So we need to find out how this whole thing ends. Here's verse 16. After his baptism, as Jesus came out of the water, the heavens, Matthew writes, the heavens were opened. And he saw the Spirit of God descending like a dove and settling on him. And a voice from heaven said, "This is my dearly loved Son who brings me great joy." Okay? There's some real significant stuff happening here. Okay? This is considered the moment, right? When God the Father speaks, this is considered the moment when Jesus' official ministry on earth began, ministry and work that, you know, that would forever change the nature of God's relationship with his people. It's some really significant stuff. But what's most interesting to me is the way that Matthew and Mark wrote about this same incident. They're the only two. All four kind of reference this baptism of Jesus, but they're the only two of the four who make some kind of reference when they write. They're the only two that make some kind of reference to the heavens opening up, which is an important piece of this whole story. Matthew, as we just read, Matthew used the word when he wrote, he used the word anoigo, which means it opened. So that's what we read. Matthew says the heavens opened. But Mark, this is fascinating to me. But Mark, when he wrote about this very same moment, when he wrote about this very same thing, he used a different word. He used the word schizo, which means torn. Like a piece of fabric is torn. Mark says the heavens were torn open. Matthew says the heavens opened, anoigo. Mark says the heavens were torn open, schizo. And I think it's a very intentional thing that Mark does here. I think it's actually a very intentional choice of words that Mark used. There's a subtle difference, but there's a huge difference between the two. It's subtle, but a big difference, a significant difference between the two. Here's what it is, right? What's opened, Matthew says that the heavens opened. What's opened can be closed again. Matthew says the heavens opened, anoigo, just whoosh, it opened. What's open can be closed again. But what is ripped, whoosh, what is torn, whoosh, a piece of fabric, it cannot be easily returned to its original state. So when Jesus comes out of the water and Mark says that at that moment the heavens were torn open, he's making a statement about the access that we now have to God and that God now has to us. Access which cannot be easily closed again. That the barriers are removed. They are torn open, and now God is in our midst. It's a moment that depicts for us very visibly. It's a moment that depicts God's interest in a greater access between us and God and God and us. He's not just some distant God, okay? He's not just sitting safely on the other side of some heavenly force field, right? Just keeping a safe distance from all the chaos and for all the, you know, bad people on earth. He's not just kind of like sitting on the other side of the clouds looking down in disapproval on all of us. No. He opened the heavens. In fact, he tore open the heavens. He removed the barriers and created a pipeline straight to him through his son, Jesus. It's a stunning moment. And it sends, if we can really, you know, see it, and if we can really hear it, it sends a powerful message, which is this, right? From start to finish of this moment, Jesus' baptism, it paints a vivid picture for us of where God stands in relation to us. From start to finish, this whole moment, it paints a vivid picture for us of where God stands in relation to us. He stands with us. He stands next to us. He stands by us. He stands for us. He wants access to us. That's what this moment of Jesus' baptism, it teaches us. Teaches us where God stands in relation to us. And so the only question then is, where will we stand in relation to him? The only question is, where will you stand in relation to him? Where will you stand in relation to a God, you know, who chose to stand with you? Where will you stand in relation to him in your family? Okay, the truth is, sometimes matters of faith can divide a family. Some are in, some are out, some are followers of Jesus, some are not, some are open to spiritual conversation, some are adamantly against it, right? In the course of my leadership in the church for 6 years, I've met so many young families whose parents are so upset. Parents will like hardly talk to them any longer because they don't associate anymore, or they don't attend any longer, you know, the church that they, you know, the family has kind of long identified with. These young families are typically like taking like new and exciting steps of faith and a real genuine relationship with Jesus, and their grandparents and, you know, parents are like, wow, I don't know if this is real, right? They're looking on in disapproval. Maybe that's you. Maybe that's your family where those dynamics at play. Where will you stand? Or where will you stand with just your own immediate family? With the ways that God has called you and equipped you and empowered you to lead your family, to know and to follow Jesus. Where will you stand in relation to him within your own family? What about at work, right? Where will you stand in relation to God at work? A place you spend so much of your time. I know that I work in a place here on Sunday, right? It's the only day of the week I work. You know that, right? I work in a place where people are expecting me to talk about God and spiritual things, right? None of my coworkers, none of my team members, you know, come to me and say, "Hey, Stan, I was really digging you, man," until you started to talk about God, right? That doesn't happen to me at work, but I know that's not necessarily the case for you. The workplace, in the marketplace, in corporate America, it is not always the most welcoming place to spiritual conversation. I get that. But it's also the places where we need Jesus the most. So I want to ask you, where will you stand there in those places? Will faith take a back seat when you punch in at 9 a.m., right? Will you just kind of sweep your faith under the rug when you walk into the office every morning? Will you just kind of blend in with your coworkers and the way that you talk and the way that you do business and the way that you treat others around you? Where will you stand in relation to this God who chose to stand with you? Teenagers, we got some teenagers here this morning. Where will you stand in relation to God at school, in the hallways of your own school? Okay, the few gray hairs on my head that I'm mortified to be finding these days, they remind me that you know that I am getting older. But I remember what it was like to be a teenager in school, and I know that being a Christian or that being a follower of Jesus, it isn't always a very popular thing. I remember that it's not always a very popular thing. I know that it can seem like it isn't very cool to admit that you go to church or that you're interested in church, but I actually think the hallways in our schools are one of the places where you can make the biggest impact right now in this world. Where you are needed most, that's the place right there. We need godly young men and godly young women standing for Jesus. And so the question is, where will you stand? Who will you stand with? And what will you stand for? And who will you love? And who will you serve? And who will you stick up for? How will you carry yourself? How would you be an example and be a model for each and every person that comes into contact with you? Will you just go along with, you know, with whatever you hear and see? We just do whatever that, you know, seems most popular or the most cool or whatever draws the least amount of attention? Or would you stand for more? You very well could be used to make a massive difference. You very well could be used to make an eternal difference in the lives of teenagers. Very well could be the one to influence the next generation of leaders, a generation of which you are conveniently a part of. Right now, where will you stand? Okay, then you know, one more here. What about our neighborhoods? Where will you stand in relation to God in your neighborhood? I actually really do think that the conversations over the fence line, I think the conversations at the edge of the driveway when you're taking out the trash, I think the conversations at the mailbox or at the block parties, I think these are some of the most significant. Significant and maybe even divine conversations that we'll ever have. So will your interest in spiritual conversations, will it always just kind of take a back seat to the weather, into the sports, into the kids' activities? Will the things that God has done in your life or the things that God has done in your family's life, will it always just be kind of kept a secret? Will your involvement here at church or whatever church you call home, will it always just be something that you kind of keep hidden, something you don't really want others to know about? You're like, church? What church? I don't know anything about a church. Not me. Where will you stand in relation to this God that first chose to stand with you? Now, I want to be really clear here as I finish. I want to really be really clear here that none of my encouragement to you in any of this, none of this means that you should be divisive and that you should be argumentative or overbearing or weird or awkward about any of this. Please don't, you know, please don't do that. Got enough weird Christians out there. Okay, none of this means that you should use, you know, your faith or use the Bible as a weapon. None of this means that you need to disown or walk away from your family or your friends who aren't interested in spiritual conversation. None of this means that you need to, like, force God or faith down people's throats or try to trap them into conversation that, you know, that they're not ready to have. None of this means that you are appointed to be the new spiritual and moral police officers on patrol on earth. That's not what I'm saying. But I am praying that there's a consistency and that there's an integrity and that there's an intentionality in us in the way that we go about our lives that would point to where it is that we stand. And who it is that we stand with. What it is we stand for. Not what it is we stand against, but what it is we stand for and who it is that we stand for. Okay? And those are some of the ways that we can take a stand with God in this world around us. But I'd be making a big mistake if I didn't take some time to ask you also where you stand in relation to God in your own heart. And in your own life, what part does he play right now? What part does he play in your life? Would you take a stand? Would you draw a line in the sand? Maybe would you would you say yes to a relationship with Jesus or yes to the next step with him? Where is it that you need to take a step and to take a stand? In a way that you maybe haven't done so yet. Would you consider giving him more of you at home? Or would you consider giving him more of you at work? Or more of you in the places that you have influence every day? Would you consider giving him more of you with the way that you engage with others, that you serve others around you? Would you even consider getting baptized 2 weeks from now, here at Midcurrent, as a public way to declare the new faith that you have in Jesus? Would you consider a public way to share with everyone who it is and what it is that you stand for? Jesus was baptized to demonstrate that he identifies with us, that God is a God who stands with us, a God who stands with you. And so the question for you, wherever it applies to you most today, is will you stand and will you take a stand with the God who first chose to stand with you? Let me pray. God, thanks so much for the incredible gift that that we have in these words that we read from Matthew and from Mark and beyond. God, what a gift to be able to kind of dissect what these dudes saw and what they heard and what they experienced. What a gift to be able to kind of to be able to learn so much about who you are just from what's written here for us. God, I thank you for the message, and I thank you for the reminder and for the truth that you are a God who stands with us. You're not a distant God. Your son Jesus wasn't just a distant man that knew nothing of the life that we were experiencing. God, I thank you for the message that you are, and that your son Jesus is someone who stands with us, who stands alongside of us, who stands for us, who stands right by us, who stands with us in all things. God, that's a huge gift and comfort, and I pray that there would be some of us here this morning who are comforted by that, God, and I pray that there are others of us who are comforted by it, but also, God, pushed to maybe even a level of discomfort that says, you know what, I gotta make something happen. I gotta take a stand. I gotta take a step to ensure that I continue to stand alongside this Jesus who stands with me. God, wherever it is, you know. Might not be the places that I listed. It might be something totally different. God, you know where it is for us. You know what's happening in our lives. You know the things that we're thinking and feeling and experiencing right now. And so I just pray that you would help us to know and to see and to have the courage to take a stand in the places where it matters most. To stand alongside of you, God. That's our hope. We thank you for this morning and for the things that we learn because of who your son is and what he's done for us. And so, God, we give you ourselves, we give you our lives and our weeks and the steps that we take to honor you, God. And most of all, we thank you for your son, Jesus, who is a great gift to us. And we pray these things in his name. Amen.